Hi, this is Jason Masters, artist on Varga and Idol on 007 Comics, and you're listening to On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast.
And welcome back to another very special edition of On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast. Of course, I am your host, Jared Ulrich, the Yard Sale Artist. I am joined for the first time by my cousin co-host here from our other shows on the podcast network. I've got Mr. Alan J. Porter with us today. How are you doing this morning, Alan?
I'm good. Thank you, Jared. It's early on a bright, sunny Texas morning, and it's great to be talking to you and talking Bond. What a great way to kick off the week.
That's right. We're starting it off right. And for those of you who don't know, we're going to be talking James Bond, obviously. And we're going to be talking James Bond in comics, which is Alan's like wheelhouse. Because if you haven't already, you need to get off your duff and go purchase a copy of his book, James Bond, The History of the Illustrated 007. It's an excellent book. I believe it's available on Amazon. Any other places you want to pimp that book there, Alan? Because it's awesome and our listeners need to know about it.
No, Amazon is fine. Just go to Amazon and either search for my name or just search for History of the Illustrated 007 and you'll find it there.
That's right. He's compiled a great book about the history of Bond in comics. That's for sure. Speaking of Bond in comics, our special guest today needs a good introduction. The most time they say they need no introduction. He needs a good introduction. So
definitely need an introduction.
So we've got all the way from South Africa. We have got the penciler, the artist who brought back James Bond into comics when Dynamite reacquired the license with the awesome stories of Varger and Eidolon. We've got the penciler, the artist, Mr. Jason Masters. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Hi there. Lovely to meet all of you. yeah, I'll try not to be too disappointing, but yeah.
Let's talk. You're going to be fine. He's about to talk Bond, right? So everybody wants to hear that.
Absolutely.
Well, we're very, very thrilled that you could be here. We're big fans of the Dynamite Comics James Bond series here on the show. I know Alan reads them. I know I read them. All my co-hosts on the MI6 Rookie Agent Show dig them. Van Plexico reads them. So you've got your hooks in all of us, Jason. So you cannot disappoint.
Oh. All right. Well, yeah. I'm better on the page than I probably am in person or digitally in person, but let's see how it goes.
I will tell you, I've been saying this since the series started and regularly say it on the various podcasts that these Dynamite comics, I think, are the best contemporary version of Bond in any medium.
Oh, really? So,
yeah.
Oh, that's lovely to hear. Thanks, man.
And I will second that. I think these are amazing. These are amazing.
I mean, of course, that's all Warren's fault. Warren Ellis, the writer's fault, more than anything. Well, at least on my two books, and then the rest.
I've never heard of him. I'm just
still an indie guy. He did a few little things. Trans Metro something wild. I don't know. Who knows? Some little comics.
I know he and I used to both do columns for the Comic World magazine in the UK back in the early 90s, and I think he went on and did some stuff after that. So.
Oh, well, good for him.
Yeah, that scrappy fire in his belly.
Well, that can-do attitude.
Exactly. Just so our listeners can get a flavor for what your style of Bond is, Mr. Jason Masters, we're going to take you through our Bond basics questions.
Cool.
Are you ready? Are you fired up?
I am ready. Do I get points for answering them quickly?
Yes, there are speed points. Like we like to say on the show, in the world of Bond, there are no wrong answers, but everyone is silently judging you. Okay, so let's start off with this one. What's your first memory of James Bond? Like, how did you get drawn into the, no pun intended, drawn into the 007 universe?
I think, like most of us as a kid, it was the movies. I didn't even know it was a book to start off with. And I think my mom took me to a little cinema to go watch, it was either For Your Eyes Only or Diamonds Are Forever, one of those. And yeah, I was hooked from then. Just like Roger Moore doing crazy things, gadgets, all sorts of wonderful things like that. And that was it for me. He's suave and funny, obviously more funny when Roger Moore was playing him than in general. But yeah, that was from then. I tried to track down all the others and then realized how good all the older films were as well. kind of opened up the Pandora's box of wanting more Bond.
I think that's how it goes for a lot of us. Yeah, Fear Eyes Only was one of my first ones, too. I was just too young to go to the movie theater, but a friend of mine had HBO, and so I saw James Bond on HBO, Fear Eyes Only.
I think I saw most of mine on VHS tape. Yeah, kids.
That's the way to go. You mentioned a couple of actors in that answer. Which one's your favorite Bond actor?
See, that's the difficult part, because I really like them all. What I like to answer with is George Lazenby, because most people like...
Yes, thank you.
It's not a bad answer. There's a lot of George fans.
He's great, and on Her Majesty's Secret Service was a great film. I mean, it was one of the first where you actually get to see a little bit more about Bond than just a killing machine, you know? A little bit where you can see the chinks in his armor. It was great.
Yeah, I actually just watched it last night in prep for our next podcast when we're doing review of it. So, every time, even though I know the ending, it still gets me every time I watch it. So. Oh,
yeah, absolutely.
So good.
Actually see some emotion coming from Bond other than anger.
Yeah.
That's an excellent answer.
But yeah, I mean, I love Timothy Dalton's brilliant. I mean, my exposure was Roger Moore, obviously Sean Connery. I mean, I think if Sean Connery's not one of your favorites, then you don't really understand Bond. And then Daniel Craig's brilliant. I think all his films have been amazing.
You can't really go wrong. I love that you went with George. That's excellent. And I love how that was immediately followed with Timothy, because that's my favorite. And I'm always trying to push that on people.
Well, one of my first drawings of designs of Bond, he looked so much like Timothy Dalton. And it was completely by accident that I had to go straight back to the drawing board and redesign him.
I wouldn't have complained about that, but the Dalton folks might have sent letters. Do you have a favorite film? Does your love of George carry over and make Majesty's your favorite film? Or is there something else that jumps out for you?
Do I have to choose one?
You don't have to, but you can give us a handful if you want.
what are your podcast listeners? Are they fans of the Daniel Craig films? Because, I mean, I am.
Certainly we have listeners that love the Craigs.
It's difficult because Casino Royale is brilliant. It's a really good film.
That one comes up a lot.
But I have a soft spot for Octopussy.
That's a good one. That's not an answer that you get a lot, but I completely understand having a soft spot for it.
I don't know if I'd enjoy it as much if I watched it again now. I mean, the airplane inside the horse trailer, all that stuff, the fights on the trains, good times.
It is good times.
Yeah, that's a fun movie. So do you have like a favorite Bond villain to go along with your favorite movie?
I guess it has to be Blofeld, right?
Which one?
They're all good. He doesn't die and then gets reincarnated as the other actor, that's all.
It's very cool. The way they never explain it, but just go with it. I've always liked that part of it.
He's great. I never know how to say the name of, is it Le Chiffre?
Le Chiffre, yeah.
He's cool, but it's maybe because I enjoyed Mads Mikkelsen's portrayal of him.
It was good.
It was really good in there.
Yeah, it was very effective in that movie, and I agree. It's an excellent movie. So do you have a particular sort of favorite henchman, like supporting cast member?
You know, you can't really go wrong with Oddjob. Oddjob and Jaws. I like villains with a gimmick.
Definitely. Interesting, because those are the two guys who never really speak.
Oh, that's also true, but I they just came across as like forces of nature, and you're like, okay, Bond, you're good, and you have your gadgets, and you can fight, but look at these guys, they're going to kill you. You know, they made Bond seem like he was in actual danger, which I enjoyed.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Very good, very good.
It's very weird not getting your guys' opinions at the same time, I have to tell you.
So do we have to go back and do these ourselves?
Yeah, I guess.
I guess it's not my podcast, damn it.
Okay, so let's talk Bond ladies. Do you have a favorite Bond girl? You could pick two if you like, if you want to pick one for you like the character, and if you want to pick another one for, you know, more surface level reasons. This is up to you. Which Bond lady or ladies is your favorite?
Ooh, yeah. You can't really go wrong with Honey Rider, old Ursula Andress.
Classic, yes.
I mean, she started the whole thing, so you have to give her props.
You really do. She is excellent and iconic. So iconic.
And then, of course, old Vesper Lynn, played by Eva Green. She's also wonderful. Also, a much more complicated, complex character than the surface Bond girls, which I think is why I like Eva Green's portrayal of her.
Yes, excellent. Now, what about soundtracks or movie scores? Is any one of the soundtracks or movie scores really, like, kind of get you really going more so than any of the other ones?
You know what? This is the part where I would have to make things up. I really don't know. I listened to a bunch when I was drawing the comics back in the day and found them very inspirational, but I could not for the life of me right now remember which films they were on.
You know, that's okay. If you're not, like, super into the music of Bond, that's completely understandable. Because sometimes you're just like, I want to hear Bond music. And, you know, all the no matter what the movie, they all have that Bond flavor, obviously. So
I enjoy them all, definitely. I never quite decided. Yeah, I never did any research afterwards. Okay, good. That was nice. But never beyond that.
That's fair enough.
So you mentioned earlier that you weren't initially aware that the Bond came from books. Did you go back and reread the novels at all?
I did actually start reading the novels. Once I got the job, I was like, knowing that Warren was going to write a book that was based more on what they wanted to do or what Ian Fleming did in the books, I thought it would be good to get a flavor, an idea of his character and how he acted. So I did read some of the books.
So was there one that sort of stood out to you particularly as like a favorite one or had the most impact?
Casino Royale. It was a good one. It was a good, fast-paced, quick read and also very unexpected. Didn't feel like all the others, story-wise. But of course, now I'm comparing the book Casino Royale to the other stories from the films because I didn't read all of them. I only read a few.
Okay. That is the foundational one. I mean, it is the introduction to Bond. So I guess if you're going to have one, that's the best one to have.
Yeah.
But you're right. It is a really quick, a particularly quick read and a very different one than the rest. Sort of a very cerebral one, I think. Less, more thinking and less action.
Sure. It doesn't really go to places you think it's going to go. And I didn't know what to expect because the films that I'd seen, honestly, none of them really stuck to the source material. So.
Yeah, there's only a few of them that are Majesty's been probably the classic example that actually stick very close to the source material. There's probably only about four or five that do that. So.
Oh, really? I must go read that. That's one of the ones I haven't read.
Oh, it's an excellent novel. I actually think he's his best.
Okay.
Well, the last question we have for our Bond Basics round for you is about James Bond and games. You know, role-playing games, board games, video games. He's popped up in a lot of that. Have you dabbled in any of that, or is that something you haven't ever really messed with?
Unfortunately, no. I know there's a huge following for GoldenEye, but I never had any of the games.
I feel sad for you.
No, I know. So I feel sad for me, too. I didn't even know there were board games. There were board games? Really?
Oh, don't get Alan started.
No, let's get Alan started. Tell me
go
about
ahead.
Board games.
Go ahead, Alan. Lay it on him.
All right. That was what he's alluding to was actually that my first encounter with Bond was when I was a young kid and a friend of mine got the Thunderball board game. I'm giving my age away here now, for his birthday. That was my first introduction to James Bond, was a little plastic frogman figure on a Thunderball board game. I had no idea who Bond was before that.
Oh, I love Thunderball film as well. That was also so great,
particularly in the 60s and stuff. There was a whole series of board games and then role-playing games and then video game
role-playing games as well. Wow, okay.
That's
makes sense. It would be everywhere.
Yeah, the role-playing games came out in the 80s, and that's what I grew up on. And then, of course, I moved into the video game age, so I've played just about all of them. Yeah, it's funny, because listening to Alan on a different show is where I actually learned that James Bond board games were a thing. So Alan really basically gave me some bills to pay on eBay is where I'm going with this.
It's like me trying to find first editions of the novels now.
Oh, yeah, those are expensive.
I
tell you, lads, I've got about five first edition in hardback, the first hardback editions, that's what I'm trying to say, that I've put together via yard sale. I've bought them all for about 50 cents a book. But you gotta have the patience.
No. I can't even explain to you how difficult it is to find things like that in all the way here in South Africa.
Oh,
geez. Yeah, specialized dealers and they're always in terrible, terrible condition. But I get them anyway because it looks like this. It adds some history when they're all screwed up and covers are torn.
Yeah, that's actually nice if you know they've actually been read rather than just sitting on a shelf somewhere.
No, absolutely. I don't trust a book that looks perfect.
Yeah. So just sort of moving on to the comics, the thing that we all love. Had you read any of the Bond comics before you actually started doing the work for Dynamite? I mean, were you aware of them?
I was sort of aware that there were some newspaper strips, and I did a bunch of research. I was trying to figure out a style that I wanted to work, the comic itself, and so I did as much research as I could online, tried to track down what there was. And, there wasn't a lot that I could find, but since I got finished, fans of the comic have started sending me, like, the manga, which was incredible to see.
Oh, that's fun, yes.
Some collections of the newspaper strips, but that was about all I saw. I knew there was some stuff, and I think also, gosh, wasn't there one in the 90s? I think they did a little like a short run. I don't think I even finished the
right.
the mini.
Oh, that would be GoldenEye. Yes, was they did an adaptation of GoldenEye that only the first issue came out, and they never did the other ones. And there was also one of the Dark Horse ones, which only saw two issues out of four.
I think I'm thinking of the Dark Horse ones because it was an original story with some really great art.
Yeah, that would be the Silent Armageddon.
Silent Armageddon. Yeah, that's Simon Jowett. He was our last interview on this show.
Oh, I really liked it. But yeah, I didn't know anything about it. And then somebody, some local person had it, and I bought it off them because I had to see it. So it's always interesting to see different people's depictions of Bond, especially considering all the various designs I had to send through to Ian Fleming's estate themselves. So, yeah, it was cool to see.
What was the sort of road that led you to becoming the first penciler of Dynamite's 007 series?
I was chatting to Warren Ellis. I'd harassed him a little bit online because I'd wanted to work with him for a long time. And so we were chatting in email about possibly doing something creator-owned together. The conversation had sort of fizzled out, and he then maybe a month or two later emailed me out of the blue, like, what do you think of James Bond? And I'm like, oh, I like James Bond. He's cool. Thinking, of course, that what he meant was, let's maybe try do a creator-owned sort of spy comic in the vein of James Bond. And I'm like, yeah, no, I like him. And next thing on my mail goes, well, I kind of been charged to bring him back. Do you want to draw him? I was like, what? And I was saying to Jared a bit earlier before we started recording that I almost said no, because I was just like, but James Bond, the comics haven't been good before, right? So, yeah.
So it's interesting that you actually had to think about it for a while there. And rather than my response, if somebody said to me, do you want to write it, would be an immediate yes without hesitation. But then I'd worry about it.
That's what I told Jason. I said, if they came to me and said, hey, you want to work on James Bond and we're going to charge you $100 to do it, I'd be like, who do I write the check to?
And then actually saying there were so many things going through my head. I was like, well, I mean, first of all, I'd kind of got myself really in the frame of mind of doing a creator-owned book and realizing that I was going to then work on a licensed property, which, I mean, while iconic, the licensed properties in comics don't generally do well. So people seem to really half-ass it. But, I mean, it was Warren's, trusting Warren as a writer that kind of brought me in. I was like, okay, well, look, he's not going to write a terrible script. That's for damn sure. Now I just have to live up to drawing it. And that was the other thing that made me want to say no. Is like, if I screw this up, there are a lot of people going to see how badly I drew this.
So that sort of leads me to my next question. Because really, you were just setting that, not just for one book, but if it worked, just setting the tone and the look for the whole series going forward. And you mentioned getting approvals from the sort of Ian Fleming Publishing. Did you get any guidelines on character design or anything from either them or Dynamite to sort of help you set that tone?
They were quite hands off, but I did in the end, I think, draw about 24 different versions of James Bond before they approved one. They were so terrified of him looking too much like an actor because he wasn't allowed to do that.
Right.
I wasn't allowed to do that. But once they were happy, like once 24 drawings later, yeah, it was cool. I actually originally started trying to draw him looking a little bit more like Ian Fleming because I think that's kind of what he – didn't he always – from what I'd read, he'd always sort of envisioned himself a little bit as Bond.
Yeah, I think there's some wish fulfillment in the character of Bond. I think some Fleming wish fulfillment in the character of Bond, yeah.
That was one of the first designs that was bombed straight away.
Yeah, no, Fleming actually envisioned Bond as looking like the jazz singer Hoagy Carmichael.
Yes, and I went with a Hoagy Carmichael sketch almost second, and I was told, no, he needs to be more attractive. Which I don't understand. I thought Hoagy Carmichael was quite good looking, but maybe just not the way I drew him.
That's interesting. Very cool. And then once you were going, you said they were pretty hands-off. What, in terms of details and storytelling and things like that? Was there sort of anything that you put in the stories that they sort of raised a red flag and said, no, you can't do that?
Oh, actually, yeah, there was. There was one there, I think, in Varga, there's a scene of him walking across the bridge to the Vauxhall building.
Yeah.
And he goes in and I have him smoking. And so it's not in the script. I had him flick the cigarette that he was smoking just off to the side, off a wall as he entered the building. And they were like, nope, he would never be this disrespectful. So I just had to redraw that frame. But beyond that, they were quite happy. I think once they read Warren's scripts, those were approved. That's all they really cared about. Or maybe the deadlines were so tight that they just couldn't get me to do any changes. I don't know.
So one thing I noticed rereading the books and flicking through them is the great use of the color red, particularly on the panels where there's like violent action, like a gun being fired or somebody having their neck broken or something. Was that your idea, Warren's, or did that sort of come from somewhere else? Because it's a real subtle but very powerful storytelling device of these sort of red spots whenever the things get really violent.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed that. I would love to have said that was me, but no, it was actually my colorist, Guy Major. That was his idea. I wanted to slow down the violence a little bit and make it as brutal as I could, because I don't like the idea of the violence being glorified in any of the comics. I wanted to kind of feel visceral, and I think he picked up on that and managed to highlight the more heavy parts, which I really enjoyed. When I saw that the first time, I was like, yep, let's keep doing that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's very, very good with either the background being red or the figures being colored red. There's always some red spot on there, a red color, and I thought it was very, very, very cool.
Yeah, I think I really enjoyed how much it helped, I think, slow down the action itself as well.
Taking a quick time out to thank our sponsors for the show over at patreon.com. We really appreciate you guys helping out to keep the show afloat.
White Rocket Entertainment.
So let's get right into it and thank Nicholas Cottrell, Joseph Fine, Christopher Burleson, Samuel Salvatore, Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Justin Bean, Chris Usher, David Evers, Tom Anderson, Timothy, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Steve Harlan, Andrew Barber, Gerard Alberich, Rich Reimer, Bill Matthews, Will Summerford, John McCune, Catherine England, Ann Conjigan, David Simpson, Josh Teal, Randall Walker, C.T. Wayne, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, Dave Powell, Michael Kirshner, Mick Vigicana, Matt Robenheimer, Chris Thrash, Logan Shulton, George Gaston, Tony Perry, Alex Gwynn, Clay Henson, J.W. Rice, Wardam Wade, Dave Medinas, Mark Squire, Joey Miller, Matthew Wagstaff, Russell Milling, Rob Morgan, Steve Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Brant Ramble, Nicholas Craig, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, and Patrick Williams, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. I know it's a long list. I appreciate you guys hanging there with us. We appreciate our sponsors so very much. Again, you can go check us out on Patreon. Just search the keyword Plexico, P-L-E-X-I-C-O, for all your Plexico needs. We appreciate it. And now, back to the show.
As far as your artistic career, Jason.
Yes.
What are some of the artists that you look up to as you were building your career? Any particular artists that have influence over you in your style? People you liked growing up? Things of that nature.
I've always been a huge fan of the people who could tell stories really well, hoping that by reading their books, they'd rub off on me a little bit more. Yeah, so growing up, people like Kevin Nolan was always one of my favorites. Just an amazing, amazing artist. Just incredible draftsman. Then later on, Eduardo Rizzo on things like 100 Bullets. Just an impeccable noirish storyteller, could tell stories like nobody's business, amazing Spotted Blacks. And he could somehow show multiple storylines on one page, just the way he would choreograph a scene. And so, I mean, obviously still does. He's still very relevant today. Although I think when, as a kid, and this always surprises most people, the thing that got me the most excited about drawing, the idea of drawing comics, was seeing Spider-Man number one drawn by Todd McFarlane and going, hey, look at that guy drawing Spider-Man all weird like that. You can do anything in comics. I should try.
That's fine, man. That tells me that we're about the same age, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, like.
I tell you what, though, I'm going to take a moment to gush here, and I've told Jason this on social media, and I'll tell anybody who will listen. I honestly feel like Jason is like the second coming of Norm Brayfogle with the way you draw action. I've never seen it so fluid from panel to panel. And
I can't take that sort of praise. That's too much. Norm was one of my heroes as well. He's so good.
You can pass on it if you want, but just as a reader, when I read your comics, I thought, I haven't been able to track the action so fluidly since Norm Brayfogle's Detective Comics run. So you may be uncomfortable with the compliment, but I'm giving it to you either way.
Thank you so much. He's definitely part in the DNA of my drawing. His Batman work, yeah, sure. Nobody really could do action the way he does.
You're in the ballpark, my friend.
That's okay. I'm happy to be in the ballpark. Even the parking lot is fine.
And now, when you're drawing your 007 comics, the question on the page reads, how did you draw it? Well, we know that you probably used pencils or digitally. That's that's fine, and you could talk about that. But more to that question, what kind of, did you have any kind of rituals? Do you have a particular place you like to work? Do you like to put on music? What's your process like?
I find that if I don't stick to, I guess you would almost call them like drawing rituals, I don't work quite as fast. So, I usually work in the studio. If I'm just penciling and figuring out choreography and a story, I don't listen to anything. I find it too distracting, even just music. It just has to be completely silent. When I'm inking, though, it's another story. Inking, I can listen to podcasts and music, audiobooks, and it's fine because they don't really distract from the actual process of art. Also, I find that if I don't start early, then this doesn't work, which is difficult because all comic book artists end up working late, and then then you have to get up and work early as well, and it becomes really difficult.
Drawing Bond, what was the sort of the best thing for you about drawing Bond, and sort of conversely, what was the most challenging?
Probably the best thing about it was just the idea that I was going to be the person like responsible for bringing him, putting him out there again. Obviously, not nearly as important as Warren on the project, but still the idea that I would be that guy that's had to design the look, had to design M, had to design Moneypenny. Because those are the fun parts when you get to create characters from nothing that becomes, designing villains, all of that. It's just world creating or just adding to a world that's so popular. And as you're saying, conversely, that's also the most terrifying part because the chances of the audience not enjoying what I'd done was pretty strong. There was a good chance that they were going to be like, oh boy, here's just another license book that failed. Well done, Jason.
I think it went the other way on that.
Now in retrospect, but I will say that every time a comic came out for about the first, I don't know, maybe 2-3 weeks off, I couldn't even look at the pages. I was just like, oh gosh. Look at all the terrible things I drew there. That bad hand or that terribly drawn car grill. It's all the little mistakes that you could have done better, but you ran out of time. They just eat at you.
By the way, I will say, as a car guy, I really appreciate the fact that you actually have realistic-looking, recognizable cars that move properly on the page. So rare in comics.
Oh, that was fun for me. And trying to figure out choreography for cars was quite challenging because I'd also never done that before. But thank you. That's awesome. I don't know if you saw I tried to put as many Bond cars in backgrounds in various stories. I don't know if you spotted them all.
Oh, no, I'm going to have to go back and look at it with a fine tooth. Oh, that'll be a real chore. Okay, I'll do that.
Now we know.
There's not that many places with cars in, but I think I even put the Bentley in there somewhere, but just a part of it, so it's much harder to recognize.
Oh, okay, very cool. All right, well, I know what I'm going to be doing over lunchtime today then.
Alan's going to be in the middle of like a board meeting. He's going to be like, I found it. What are you talking about, Alan? Oh, don't worry about it. Well, that's great. Obviously, in this wonderful world of Bond comics, you've become quite the name, Jason, and it's well-earned. It really is. What non-007 work that you've done are you most proud of that you'd like our listeners to say, hey, I might could check this out that Jason's worked on?
Sorry, I didn't even read that question, so I'm completely not sure what to talk about now.
Just make up answers. That's all you got to do.
I did a story for Marvel with Deadpool after Wolverine died again. I think it was called Wolverines, and which that one I think I'm probably the most proud of. That one I can actually look at it, and most of the pages I'm not cringing when I look at them. It had some fun. It had a fun story. Charles Soule wrote it, so obviously it was going to be good from a story perspective, and then the art itself, it was pretty good mostly.
Your own worst critic.
Beyond that, it's hard for me to recommend all stuff. I'm probably the most proud, honestly, of the Bond stuff so far, of what's out.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't realize you'd done Wolverines, which is interesting because they'd released some issues of Wolverines with blank cover, so that artists could put original art on the cover. And the same thing with Varger. They released blank covers for that, and I've done art on both of those. So long story short, I've ruined a couple of your comic books.
They were already ruined. I did a few fun things for Marvel, and then I was trying to think, some of the DC stuff was really good. I got to draw Batman story, Batwing, Batwoman. The Batwoman stuff was also fun. That was a really fun world to play in. But that's also now quite a while back. I'm hoping I've evolved as an artist since then.
Alan, did I step on a follow-up question? I thought I heard you.
I was actually just going to ask about the Batman stuff. I was going to say I thought you'd done. You mentioned Batman earlier, then you'd done some stuff with the Batman family. So, but you just mentioned it. So
yes. Yeah, I got to do a really fun Legends of the Dark Knight story. That was my first Batman story ever with Joe Harris, the writer, and that was really fun. I got to design my own Batmobile, draw Batman the way I wanted to draw him. It was very cool.
Oh, very cool. I will have to dig that out. Actually, when I liquidated my Batman comics collection, the only title that I kept the complete run of is Legends of the Dark Knight. So I will have to go pull that out and take a look.
Oh, excellent. Might be there.
Love that run. What about projects you're currently working on, Jason? You got anything upcoming that you're allowed to talk about, want to talk about?
I'm busy working on an interesting thing. I don't know if you guys know the comic app Line Webtoon. It's a Korean app.
No.
No.
I was approached by Zach Howard, the comic book artist. Zach Howard, I don't know if you know him.
Mm-hmm. No.
He was doing some work with Lion, and they had a story they wanted to do with Common, the musician Common, musician, actor, activist, poet, all of that. So we're doing a book where he essentially plays the main character, but it's not him, and he's going to be doing music for it. I think it's coming out in the next couple of months, but I'm not sure. We're busy waiting on the music from him. And it's kind of like a Indiana Jones meets James Bondish sort of adventure story. And it's really fun. I was drawn to it purely because of the story written by Mike Racht, who I've never met, so I don't know how to say his surname. R-A-I-C-H-T, Mike Racht, I don't know. But yeah, he wrote a fantastic story, and I was like, all right, yeah, this seems like fun. This is a medium I haven't tried before. And it's going to be a comic that everybody can read for free, because right now there's not even a subscription to use it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, very cool.
We have made it through of all our questions there, Jason, and you did very well. If you made up things, we couldn't tell. Alan, do you have follow-up questions for Jason?
I don't think so. I really, really enjoyed the conversation. And as Jared says, if you were making all that up on the fly, that came out very smoothly. I would never have known.
I'm terrified of you.
Well, that's all the time we have for On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, this very special episode featuring Jason Masters, artist extraordinaire. Go pick up his books. The James Bond stuff is amazing. It's all available on Amazon. They've collected them into hardback trades, which are wonderful and very affordable for as much great stuff as you get in there. So go check out Varger and Eidolon both on Amazon, and just keep your Dynamite Comics flowing, because what Jason started has continued to be excellent. So thank you again, Jason, for being here. We really appreciate it.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you guys for having me on.
And Alan, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me on this morning. It was great. And it was great to meet you too, Jason. I really enjoyed the conversation.
You too. I'm going to look out for your book. I'm going to go order it now. I wish I had gotten it when I started this. It would have been very useful.
Thank you very much.
You heard a glowing endorsement for Alan's book just now from Jason Masters. Go pick up Alan's book. It's called The History of the Illustrated 007. So while you're on Amazon picking up Jason's trade paperbacks from Dynamite, pick up Alan's book, History of the Illustrated 007. Thanks again for both of you being here. Alan and I have been having some loose talk about doing some more episodes with some more James Bond creators, especially in the world of comics, so this might be the first of more to come. Get excited, folks. Thanks for joining us, and remember, On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast will return. I would like to once again thank Mr. Jason Masters for being on the show today, along with
my co-host, Mr. Alan J. Porter. And another big thanks goes out to Pat DJ Cristado Sampson for editing this episode. You can catch Pat over on our MI6 Rookie Agents show here on Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, or you can catch him with his own show called The Long Box Crusade. Great show about comic books, and since we were talking about comics today, it seems like you might want to check that out. Once again, that's The Long Box Crusade. So thanks to Pat, Alan, and Jason for being here. We'll catch you next time.